Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We say things that don't mean anything, but thanks for listening.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to We Say Things, episode 226. Suns fan here with Sindarin. It's been a while, my friend. It's been quite
We're
a
back.
While. Yes, we yeah. are. And of course, we'll talk about that. But first, we have to say thank you to the people in the In Bruges tier and, of course, all the patrons that help us continue to come out with these podcasts irregularly. Of course, that was
mostly very regularly.
Yeah, that was an anomaly. Fair. We'll talk about that. But thank you to dear Mr. Nieblin. What is to exchange electrons with their wave functions in Hartree-Fock theory? Please, I'm desperate, Captain Broccoli. Okay. STGC Daniel, humbled bookmaker, recommends Relic Arena. Please do a belch instead of reading this name. Sorry, I belched right before we were recording the podcast.
I actually Googled Hartree-Fock, the way he spelled it, and Google suggests the right thing.
Which is?
That's good. The Hartree-Fock method. It's spelled differently.
Of course.
Yeah, nice. Okay.
Okay, good. Moving on. Mr. I Love the NBA segment. Will Cinder and host Shannon at TI next? At next TI, or ditch him in Eastern Europe like last week's? That's right. That's a good question. Pepperballs, T-Coil, Q-Ludes is ready to praise the podcast. Lab Dota, Yatoro does it again, Cinderin, Magdev, and Disco Farm D.
And the Mega Pope, Zan Xavier, Nate Thicko, 01, Ham Scroats, Shark TM, Janie Dopp, nothing to see here, Yves Raymond, Ben Broomhead loves the NBA segment. Wait, that's two people loving the NBA? Fuck that. Wooden Aftertaste, Anonymous, and Electron Exchange with Orbitals, Alters... Okay, let's try that again. Electron exchange with orbitals alters atom energy via quantum mechanics, impacting reactions and properties. Mr. Niebling.
Okay, I understood about 0% of that one. Appreciate that fact. Very good.
That was an oddly unspecific one from him.
I think it might have been
but
a response to...
I'm sure Captain
to...
Broccoli is very happy about your Hartree-Fock theory.
So I was Very thinking, I just changed the outline around. I think we talk about this first, just because it's more natural.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so Dream League Season 22. I guess we'll talk about the experience and all that, and then we'll talk about the tournament afterwards. But this is, like, first of all, obviously have to say sorry for not doing more podcasts. I think we did one during that five-week period that I was gone. Is that correct?
I'm not sure, actually. I know we didn't do any during Dream League.
Or during Dubai. It was in Estonia in between.
Right, yeah, so you're probably right, actually.
So I did 2 weeks in Dubai, then 1 week, less than a week in Estonia, and that's when we did the podcast, and then now 2 weeks from Dream League, and we're back. So for Dream League specifically, there just wasn't time. We'll talk about that a bit as well. I know people were asking about Pyrian Flax. I think we all know that today, after the podcast, that's when Valve will push the button for this big patch. So that'll probably be the next episode as we talk about the patch. But if by next week there is no new patch, then Pyrian Flax will be the guest.
Yes.
Just have to schedule that. But I guess, did I talk about Estonia last time? I don't know.
Not in particular, I think.
I was in my hotel room a good amount of the time. It was very cold. Buka lives there. He lives everywhere. He's a fucking nomad, but he was there at the time. And we hung out a bit with some of his friends. We did, some touristy stuff at Old Town, which is very charming. I enjoyed it. We went to like this kind of, I forget the name of the place, but it was like a medieval type setting of a dinner where they wouldn't use any ingredients other than things that you could have found back in the day. And at first Book was like, yeah, I've heard about this place. I never visited because I figured it would just be kind of meh food, but it would be a good experience. But it ended up being good food, quite good food. He was very surprised.
Did they season it?
I mean, there was seasoning. It was good.
Yeah, there wasn't that much seasoning back in the medieval ages, you know?
So, yeah, well.
I'm just saying, maybe they didn't stay true to their concept, Shannon.
That's possible. I couldn't get Coke, though, so they stayed true to that. But they did take credit card at the end. Do you want to use the magic machine, I think is what they said, or something to that effect. But yeah, Estonia was pretty cool. Obviously, it's really cold, so you couldn't really do too much, but I enjoyed myself. And then we went to Dream League, Cinderman. And I have to say, I don't know. Okay, you tell me what you feel after what I say, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I had a great time and all that. Dream League is one of the best run tournaments. And the fact that they're so casual allows us to do whatever the fuck we want, which is great. But it was a grind. And I don't know if it has to do with the fact that I did 2 weeks of Dubai before that. But there was first group stage, which it was like, 5 days of two best of two, so 4 games a day, which is not too bad. I think that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had a tiebreaker day, which we did not have a day off. Others did. So we had to do tiebreaker day, which was like 3 or 4 games or whatever it was. And then 7 days straight of two best of threes a day, which is a lot, especially when it's a lot of them go the 6 games. And even if they don't, they're 50-minute plus games on average, pretty much. So that was, it got to a point where I was beyond burnt out. I don't know how you felt.
I think that week was one of the, just in terms of workload, was one of the, was it maybe the longest week we've done, I guess?
Probably.
I feel like we've had a similar format in the past, but like you said, the patch just generated longer games. So each game was, it was just more work hours in total, right? And I think there is a difference in how to say it. If there's a lot of long games, that's fine, and that's one thing, but it's also a lot about the way in which they become elongated, right? Like some of the games were just dragged out maybe 20 minutes more than they would have been a year ago just because of the patch itself, where it's like, okay, this game state 20 years ago, this team wins minute 40, and now they win minute 60.
20 years ago.
Did I say 20 years ago? 1 year ago. 20 years ago, they probably would have also won earlier.
Yeah,
probably. To be fair. In Dota 1. But yeah, so that was, I think that's part of why it felt like a grind to you, is that it, a big portion of the games felt like they were kind of a foregone conclusion and you were just waiting for it to end a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest criticisms people have about the patch right now, is that going high ground just takes too long.
Well, it's weird though, because like at Dubai, I definitely felt that, but then there were also like really hype games. Like it was a mix. I feel like the letter patch somehow made it worse, which is really weird, because I can't remember the last time that's been a thing where, especially in the group stage, there were so many games. Like it's literally over in the laning stage. Somebody has a 5K lead at like 7 minutes. It's like, and it takes 45 minutes to end. Like, how? That's ridiculous. So some of those games were brutal,
I think a few of the epic ones made up for it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think something to keep in mind is that the winner of the last tournament was Falcons. And whenever a team wins, other teams are more likely to try to mimic their style, at least to some extent. And we know how Falcons win games. So if that is the meta, so to speak, if the best team is winning slow victories by grinding out the map after getting an advantage in the mid game, other teams are more likely to try to do the same thing because it seems to be the winning strategy, right?
Yeah, true.
So I think this is like also a little bit reinforced by the fact that they won. Whereas if other teams would have won the previous event that were more aggressive, playing more push heavy, the meta of this tournament might have been different, just based off that alone. So, but I agree. I don't think the letter patch really did what we had hoped. except nerf certain heroes, which is fine. But effectively what you did was you just moved the hero pool around. It didn't really change pacing very much. But I have high hopes for the next patch to do that. I think you'd be hard-pressed to make the game slower. So,
yeah, for sure.
We'll see. But yeah, so, great tournament. Do you want to go over the results?
I was going to talk about one more thing, because a lot of I've actually gotten quite a few questions about this, and obviously I see a lot on Reddit from time to time about me casting, specifically me, not you, because you've cast it before many times in the past, finals. Yeah. And I've been on record saying that I'm not a fan or I don't want to do finals. And they ask if I've changed my mind. I guess I've changed my mind. And there's a couple reasons for that. But mainly, I've just... It feels like in the past, I was like, I don't think my casting style fits the grand finals. But I feel like now that we've gotten more experience together, we've done lower bracket finals at TI, for example, and I thought that went perfectly fine. I thought it was very hype. Like, we definitely toned down the silliness a bit if it's needed. Or if it's really boring, we turn it up, which I think definitely helps. But now, like, I did Dubai finals. Now, this finals, I did a bunch of DPC regional finals since I said that back in the day. And I don't know. I feel like people don't care. So I guess I don't care either anymore. So it's whatever.
Oh, yeah. That's the Dota mindset right there.
It's funny because I've turned it down before, like, for a couple other tournaments, like, a few years ago. But, or not a few, like, last year. But I don't know. It's fine. It's like any other series. It's just more work, you know? The two finals that I've done this year are now 3-0 stomps by Falcons. Appreciate that. Really entertaining stuff.
Yeah, they were basically the same as any other series in duration, to be honest.
Exactly. But yeah, we can talk about the tournament itself. So did you write down our predictions?
I did. We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
Go ahead. So first of all, it was two. So the format for this tournament is two group stages. The first group stage is two groups of eight and top four advance. And then the second group stage is the top four from each group. So it's eight teams again, top four advance again, with the top two going to upper finals and the bottom two going to lower finals. And then it's a very short playoffs that takes 2 days because there's only four series to be played. So I guess we should talk about surprises first in group stage one. Liquid completely bombed out, which is surprising and not surprising at the same time, because Liquid is good at every event except Dream League. And they got shared last place in group B. Aside from that, I guess honorable mentions to teams that were close to making it but didn't quite make the cut. Tundra were one game off making group stage two. Azure were one game off making a tiebreaker for group stage two. Actually, Tundra's would have been a tie as well with Spirit. And the teams that made it through were BetBoom in first in Group A, Falcons, OG, and Gaming Gladiators. OG and Gaming won a tiebreaker with Virtus Pro. And in Group B, Extreme, Shopify, and Aurora, as well as Spirit, made it through, and there were no ties in Group B. They were tied first to third, but it doesn't matter because going into Group Stage 2, there's no seeding, so it's just about making it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then in group stage two, this is a bit of a grind, but we'll get through it. In a group stage two, largely the scores from group stage one held true. So the top two from group A advanced again, which was Falcons and BetBoom. And from group B, the top team in Extreme Gaming advanced, whereas the second place teams in Shopify and Aurora actually dropped all the way to the bottom. So they had a bit of a drop off there, and Spirit survived. With a 9-9 score. And then into the playoffs we go. First round of lowers is Extreme versus Spirit. Extreme lose this series 2-1. Falcons plays BetBoom in the upper finals, and Falcons wins 2-1. BetBoom then drop down to face Extreme on day two. They open the day out with a nice quick 2-0 against Extreme, and then their reward is to go into the finals against Falcons and lose in about 52-minute average game time or something. I got it 54, 3-0. Falcons heated up so hard during this tournament. It was kind of crazy to watch. They started off well in groups with a 9-5. And after that, they lost two games.
Yeah,
they went 14-1 in group stage two. And the playoffs, they went 5-1. So after group stage one was over, they went 19-2. Which is was already incredible many years back to be able to do that. Nowadays, it's insane because of how close the teams are.
Well, apparently not. They're not close.
Apparently not, but this is the kind of thing you would have maybe seen at like TI2 with, you know, LGD in group stage one or something, getting a 19-2 score. But this nowadays, this is really, really crazy. So they were just that much better. It was quite impressive to watch. For comparison, the second place team in group stage two was 11-8, and they were 14-1. So
yeah,
deservedly, they just scooped the whole thing. I mean, they were just better. So happy for them that they won. They really deserve it. They played fucking amazing. Not really much else to say than that. And another great result for BetBoom. I was a doubter. I shouldn't have. They did well once again. So they're definitely starting to be more consistent.
Remember before the grand finals, you thought I was crazy. That was going to be a 3-0.
No, I didn't think you were crazy. You were just insanely confident. You said there's no way, basically, that is anything else.
It's and BetBoom. I was like, expecting anything? Come on.
Well, they won a game in the upper bracket, and they could have won 2-0 against Falcons there, actually. Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking.
Well, even if they 2-0 Falcons, they get 3-0'd in the finals. This team, they know how to get really far and then just get dumpstered. That is their go-to move, if you will.
I see.
I like watching them, though.
If you keep getting second, that's great. Let me say that. That's a very good
result.
That
is true.
So, all right, predictions time, Shannon. We gave our top three in no particular order before the tournament. And let's start with my predictions.
I'm going to guess I got 2 out of 3.
Okay. How many do you think I got?
0 out of 3.
That is correct. How many of my predictions do you think made group stage two?
Group stage two. Well, you picked Liquid. I remember that one. And you probably pick Azure Ray, so I'll say 1 out of 3.
That is correct. And who did I pick for my third prediction?
Maybe Spirit?
That's correct.
Oh.
All right. So my top three picks, none of them made it. Spirit got fourth. Your top three picks, and this is the order in which you said them, okay? I just wrote them in order when you said it. Falcons, BetBoom, Extreme.
I said Extreme.
You nailed the top three in order.
That's fucking good.
That is... Why really did I pick
Extreme?
That's so tournament. That's I don't so know. Weird. That's incredible.
Well, there goes my fucking lottery
ticket. If you
were
a betting man and you would have put money on this and there was some sort of way you could have predicted top three in order on bets, I don't know what the odds for this would be, but it would have been really fucking high.
Wow.
To guess the exact top three. That's crazy.
I'll take
that's
it.
Wild. I'm very impressed. Congratulations. Right, this so will not happen again.
Now the meal that you owe me costs $1 more, $101.
Okay, I'll give you that. You'll get $1 for this.
For those that don't know, I guess we should mention on the podcast, I also made a prediction in the middle of one of our casts that the Roche timer, the average Roche taking point for the first one is 22 minutes. And then I think it ended up being, first we saw it was 22:20, I want to say.
Yeah.
And then over time it would lower, 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 and then eventually got to 22:01. And of course, during this time, Sindarin said if it gets to 22 exactly, that he'll buy me a $100 meal. So I was very invested in this. Went down to 22:01, and then the next game it was 21:59, and I was freaking out. But eventually it did land.
So hard.
It did land on 22, and we all went out to dinner. And you were supposed to buy my dinner, Cinder, and it was a nice, expensive steak. But Gork bought it for everybody. So you still owe me a $100 meal. I'm not going to forget it.
Yep. I won't forget it either. We'll have plenty of opportunities, I'm sure. So.
All right. So that was Dream League.
Yep.
Good stuff.
And during Dream League, we got some of the best news in a very long time randomly. As a matter of fact, this actually dropped while we were out for dinner. I was just randomly checking my phone. During dinner, I know, very shameful, but I just quickly, I don't remember why.
We were very boring. Susie. We were boring the shit.
I think
shit
I was texting Susie or something, and I just checked, and I saw this news that Valve just posted out of nowhere that TI was going to be in Copenhagen, and I was super fucking excited. So, to give some context to this, we've talked about in the past on the podcast what would be cool locations for future TIs, especially if it comes to Europe, and this was one of my choices that I think would be really cool. Obviously, personal bias aside, I also think... despite obviously being Danish, that I think this is a pretty good hub for a tournament like this. Connectivity is very good. The infrastructure of the city is very good. The size of the arena, I think, is very suitable for TI. So they've announced that this will be in September in Royal Arena. They haven't given the exact dates yet, which I don't know why. But apparently that is not public information for some reason. I don't know when they're going to announce that. But that will be...
All right, before I congratulate you, I just want to call you a real piece of shit, okay?
Why?
How much are you traveling this year, you absolute pile of garbage? How long is a flight to Stockholm? Like an hour?
I need to take two flights every time.
Oh, one layover. Oh, God.
Hey, you asked. I'm not saying it's terrible.
Now so you like fucking TI's in your hometown.
2.5 hours of flights total.
Jesus.
That's not my hometown, Shannon. It's a 35-minute flight.
It's close enough. It's like saying that Tucson is not my hometown. Well, actually, that would be an insult. Bad example. Anywho, you disgust me with how much I have to travel. You can just chill out. Everything's in Europe these days. Okay. Now that I'm past
how many
that.
How many TIs did you have at Easy, though?
Well, how many TIs was I invited to that were
That's
in Seattle?
That's a good point. That's fair. Anyway.
Piece of garbage. Congratulations, yeah, so though, Sender, and I'm happy for you. I am. I really am.
So, I am from Northern Jutland, and this is in Copenhagen, so it's about as far from where I live as possible, but I still know the city quite well. I've been there many times. I think the pro players that live in this city are... I think Crit lives at least close. No-Till lives in the area. Misery, I think, also lives there. And Ace, too. I think maybe all four of them, actually. But I could be wrong about that. But obviously, it is... I think about a fifth of Denmark's population lives in Copenhagen and the surrounding area. So it's a very big part of the country. That would be, I don't know what would, that would be compared to in the US. You don't have a city that takes up that big a part of the population, but
no,
it's like if, what's the biggest state in terms of population? Is it Texas?
California, easily.
California?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I just wonder how many times more of the population needed to live there for it to compare. But yeah, anyway, that's really fucking cool news. To give you an idea of this, Dota 2 has never had a tournament in Denmark. So it's not just that we haven't had TI, which would be completely fine, but we have never had any international LAN of any size. Mm. No majors, no minors, no third-party tournaments ever. The only Danish-hosted tournament that there was during COVID, and it was Blast, which did an online tournament. And Blast operates out of Denmark, so that's the only one we've ever had. Even in Dota 1, I don't remember any tournaments of any meaningful size either. So this is the very first one we get, and it's going to be fucking TI. So that's crazy. I would have been hyped to see any LAN here, but the fact that this is obviously outstanding. So, very cool. I wonder why they chose it. If it has something to do with the CS2 major coming up, which will be in Copenhagen as well, the first one.
That's true.
And obviously, the production partner that Valve has for TI is PGL. So perhaps the CS2 major, maybe all the planning and the infrastructure and stuff was really good for them. So they were like, let's do this with TI as well. Maybe PGL were really happy. Maybe pricing is surprisingly good, which would shock me a bit because Denmark is pretty expensive. But who knows? Anyway,
have you been to the Royal Arena before?
I don't think so, but I am going in 2 weeks to the CS2 major. So then I'll be there.
So it's the same arena then. Okay.
I think so, yeah. Let me just make sure. Yeah, it is.
Very cool.
Yeah, I'm going with some of my friends in that weekend. We're going to go and see the games for, I think it's either 1 or 2 days we have tickets for. I think it might only be one day. And then we're just going to hang out in the city and visit one of them who lives there. So that'll be a good time in 2 weekends' time.
Yeah, I'm interested
to see. And I'll get to see how the arena looks for esports.
Yeah, they probably have to change it around because like the screen definitely needs to be bigger for Dota. Like Arlington had that issue where it's like the arena that they use is used for like first person shooter type games normally. So when you have Dota just put onto that size of a screen, you can't see anything. It's just too small.
I don't think Valve has ever missed with that at TI though.
That's true.
I think the screens have always been
well, that's what I'm saying. I think it's not solid. Like whatever you see is probably not going to be the setup anyway.
Right. I would imagine. Yeah. I was thinking more in terms of like the seating and the way in which the arena like lends itself to having teams on stage and stuff like that. Like how it's going to look.
Well, speaking of that, they haven't mentioned what the format is or anything, right? There's 16 teams participating, which is two less than last year. So we don't know if it's going to be like this whole week of nothing and then just the weekend, and that's 3 weekends worth of Dota.
Mm, yeah.
No clue. Do you have a preference? I'm trying to remember what I used to even prefer.
I think having the 4 or 5 day break, aside from the fact that for once during a Dota event, we got to do some tourism stuff, I think just it's a bit dragged out. I understand that you could argue it builds up hype and whatnot, but if they're only announcing this one arena, it makes me think they don't have a second one for the previous stage. And if they don't have a second one for the previous stage, I don't think there's any point in making that 1 week break so that you can have two different weekends with two different stages of the tournament in arenas, right? So my hunch is that they go back to the older format where we just don't have the first 2 days of main event in the arena, but they're just held separately, but we'll see. That would be my guess.
Yeah, I was remembering my thoughts, and it was that it was kind of disconnected, which in some ways was good probably for viewership, but just from a personal bias standpoint, like, we didn't cast very much, and we didn't really find much of a flow. Like, literally the last 2 years, I feel like I found no flow, because we're coming off of not casting with each other. Not that it's like shit casting or anything, but it's like 2 months of not casting it, and then we do it's like 4 best of 3s and we're done. Okay.
Right.
It's like nothing. Like, I feel like.
Yeah, they might do it differently this time, like, that we cast we'll groups too or something.
Yeah, if we cast, I'd love to cast some groups. Like, I love that shit. Okay. So, congratulations, Sindarin. You finally did it.
You're making it sound like I won something.
You did. You won a TI. Good job.
I worked hard and I got TI to Copenhagen. All me. All right.
So while we were gone, there was also an update concerning Dota. It was a Dota Plus update, but more specifically, it added a thing called Dota Labs, where they basically will be putting in new features that you can use if you want, or you can just ignore them. And if people end up liking them, they'll just implement them into the game. I would assume more as an optional thing anyway. So the first one is the overlay map. So it's basically a hotkey that you can set up, and it comes up with a mini map in the middle of your screen. You can kind of change the size, but it's pretty large and it's transparent. So you hold the key, it shows the mini map, just get a quick view or whatever, which I think is nice. I don't think I would use it personally, but I could see pros potentially using it. What do you think?
Yeah, so this reminds me of isometric ARPGs like Diablo or Path of Exile or whatever, where as your character is running, you have the map underneath you so you can navigate where you're going in the room. I think that's where they draw the inspiration from. And yeah, as with all of these, there's multiple features coming up. I think the nice thing here is it's not forced on anybody. You try them. If you like them, you can put them in. And if it turns out these give some sort of significant advantage, then obviously people can adapt to them, right? You can learn to use this if it helps a lot. I don't think this will make a very big difference, but I think it's nice quality of life for people that care about this.
Yep.
I haven't tried it myself yet, but it's a cool idea.
Yeah, so, I don't think it hurts to have. So, yeah. The second thing that they added is called the modifier key filter bindings, which is kind of strange. It essentially disallow, like, if you set it up, you can set, like, if you use a spell, it cannot hit a creep anymore. I think that's how it works, right?
Or vice versa. I think you can set it up both ways, right?
Yeah, so it make it's definitely quality of life. Imagine if this came out 5 years ago. How fucking angry people would be. How far we've come, man. How far we've come. This is another one that it's. I feel like it's very specific. Like, I can't think of a... I'm sure there's an interaction that would be more useful to not be able to click on creeps with, but can you override it? I guess it's a hotkey, right? Wait, is it a hotkey or is it specifically set for, like, certain spells?
I think you hold a specific... I think you... Shit, I actually don't remember this. I think you hold a hotkey, and then when you hold that one, your spell cannot hit. Whatever you've chosen. I believe that's how it works.
Okay.
But you can do it multiple ways. I think there's more options than the two we just mentioned. I think there's 4 in total, and I don't remember exactly what they are, but I mean, the essence of it is the same. You can hold a bind so that your spells can only be used in one way.
So I think like one example that I initially thought of with pros is, let's say you're high ground or something and the enemy wants to blink and Yules or something like, or sorry, blink and initiate like a Magnus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you have your Yules on the high ground ready to go and you're clicking the ground, and that could be an option that you just can't click a creep that just happens to walk in your crosshairs, right? So just an example of that. That's interesting. And then the third thing is the high visibly local hero health bar. So basically the health bar just looks, your health bar looks totally different. It's much more bright. You can differentiate it when there's a bunch of shit going on. And I think it's great. I think this one should actually just be default. Like, you should obviously have the option to disable it, but I don't see a reason why this shouldn't just be default in the game. I think it's great.
I think this is one that was clearly the most positively received, because this seemed to be a problem that a lot of players have. And I think the lower in skill brackets you go, the more confusing teamfights are to people. So losing track of your hero can definitely happen. And especially if you're playing heroes that have multiple units, right? Then it can be even more overwhelming. So I think this is just a really good change. I don't see any downsides to this either. Out of all the three options, I think this is the one I'm most likely to use, just because in edge cases where it might be a bit tricky or whatever, or things could get weird, you never have any doubts in your mind exactly where you are. I think for pro level, which one of these will do the most? I think the overlay map has the potential to do most.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like all three of these are less relevant the better you get. That would be my take. So, but that's also obviously completely fine. I think if these are very good for the majority of players, that's the kind of changes you want to see, right? Dota isn't only about the top 0.01% of players. It's about everyone.
Yep.
So these are very good ideas, I think.
Okay, so that's Dota Labs. I think it's a really cool idea that they're just kind of putting in these new features that they're not sure if people will like, or they're just not ready yet. They can make they've already made revisions to the map one. I think they gave the options to make it bigger and less transparent and whatnot. So pretty cool.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, next up, the Sumail versus EG lawsuit. So this is a report from Richard Lewis. I'm just going to read it. After 2 years, so just for people that don't know, Sumail sued EG. We talked about it way back when.
How many months ago was this? It was last year, right?
It feels like
toward
it was last
the
year.
End of the year, I think.
Something to do with his contract with the company, and to do with like the shares, and I can't remember the specifics. Yeah. But anyway, after over 2 years of legal action, a jury has found in favor of Evil Geniuses over their former player Sumail on all counts. Sumail had lodged the complaint arguing that his former organization had breached their contract when converting stock he held within the company from preferred units to common stock, supposedly without him understanding the gravity of that change. After days of presenting evidence and arguments, the jury decided that neither EG, here in the suit under the company's blah, 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 nor Peak Six had a case to answer. With no ground conceded by either party, the matter proceeded to a jury trial where the jurors were given lengthy instructions regarding how to assess each of the claims made against the defendants. Beginning on the 13th of February, the verdict was officially filed on the 1st of March with the claims of breach of contract, breach of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing, false misrepresentation, false promise, breach of fiduciary duty, conversion and unclean hands were all found in favor of EG. Naturally, this means that Sumail walks away from the lawsuit with no awards of damages. Of course, we don't really know the specifics still, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know how much we'll have to comment, but...
Yeah. I think at large, the community, obviously, I mean, this is just a natural thing, right? The community will generally be cheering for the little guy against the big corp. I don't know the details, but I think people were... Also, you know, Sumail has a lot of fans, so a lot of people were hoping he would win his case, but like you said, we don't really know any of the stuff that was filed, any of the specifics, so it's hard to say whether this was quote-unquote bullshit, that this was the run-out or not. Like, who knows? So, not going to speculate on that. The thing that I was wondering is, you can probably help me with this, because this is an American lawsuit. Your law system is different from ours. Does it not get publicly announced how many jurors are in favor or against these all of these decisions?
I'm pretty sure the way that the jury, I mean, I could be wrong here, so don't take this as gospel. I think it has to be unanimous no matter what, or else it's a hang trial.
So let's say, how many jurors are there?
I don't know.
Isn't it like a two-digit amount or something?
Yeah, it's probably like 12 or so, I would guess.
Yeah, so if it's 11 to 1, then what? Isn't it just...
It might depend on what kind of trial it is, but
okay.
To my knowledge, it has to be unanimous for like criminal stuff, for sure.
It must be unanimous. Number of jurors varies by state, says Mavis in your chat. Okay, that's kind of interesting, because I was wondering with this, like, how one-sided it was. But if it has to be completely one-sided, then there isn't much there. And the other thing is, and obviously this will never be disclosed, I wonder how much this costs to mail, right? Because lawsuits in the U.S. are expensive, really expensive. And unless he cut some corners and got some, you know, cheaper services or whatever, maybe he has some connections or whatnot that could have helped him out. I don't know if people would do something like this pro bono, but this was probably...
I can imagine.
Fair to say, probably six-digit expense, maybe, to make this lawsuit, do you think?
Yeah, like probably. It's a good thing he's a millionaire.
Oh, that's, yeah, obviously, but, yeah, that's that. I guess nothing more will come of this. I don't know if we'll ever have the chance to talk to him about this in person, and if he even wants to talk about it. I feel like this is not something you sit down with some Sumeldon and you're like, hey, how'd the lawsuit go? I would genuinely be very curious to hear more about something like this from the perspective of the person who did it and lost. Like, because it's such a closed world, I think, for a lot of people that you just see on TV, and TV is super misleading, right?
Yeah.
You just don't really know what's going on. But yeah, that's that.
It is
speaking
resolved.
Of EG, I don't know what they're doing. All right, let's move on.
Yeah, true. Next thing is Grubby. Did you... You just woke up, so I don't know if you saw this at all.
I did see this light last night, I think.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe I read it this morning, actually.
So, anyway. Is it still on Reddit? Anyway, I found it on Reddit initially. So, Grubby had a kind of a closing speech on his stream. And I would recommend everybody watch it, because it was very eloquent. And he's actually a really good speaker, I have to say. But essentially, it was... about the fact that he took like a 3-week break from Dota because things were getting too toxic. And then he comes back, and then first day was pretty good games, and then this next day he had a couple of bad actors, let's say. And the speech was essentially about how he's probably going to stop playing Dota now. Doesn't mean that he's closing the door completely, but he's talking about all the things that he wishes. Like, he's basically goes on to say that Dota is maybe the best game he's ever played, or the best game ever made, even more so than Warcraft 3, which that surprised me, actually. But like a 10 out of 10. But, and overall, the community is great, but there's always going to be like these really toxic people, and that it just ruins it for him. I would recommend you guys watch the video. It's actually really, like I said, really well spoken. I think the way that I digested it, well, first of all, I don't disagree with anything he said. But I do think that that is very normal for multiplayer games. That's my take. Like, I would consider, and again, it's not like I played every multiplayer game. I know there's a lot of like Riot games that maybe you can't get away with even speaking on mic. Like in League, apparently you can't use mic or something.
Oh, you can be toxic in that game, though, let me tell you. Right. First-hand experience.
But I think for me, I know Dota is considered to be a really toxic game. I think Counter-Strike is more toxic than Dota. I don't think it's really close, personally. I played a lot of both. I think the people, there's a different type of person that plays Counter-Strike as well, which might lead that to a different direction. But anyway.
So I think there's a couple of things to... Like, I think the take about CS is interesting, because I think, let's say you're an asshole in both games, right? How does it influence the game? In CS, if somebody's just being a dick, if he's team killing you, he gets kicked. So that's the biggest part, that's the biggest griefing you can do in that game, is killing your teammates. you get kicked. The second biggest grief you can do is probably either hogging the bomb and never planting it, or team flashing on purpose, and griefing them that way. For the most part in CS, you can still, even if you have a griefing teammate, you can still find major impact and play for yourself and do a lot of stuff with your teammates. In Dota, if you have somebody who's unwilling to play or deliberately feeding, the game is just over, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's like an order of magnitude in how impactful the griefing is for the quality of the game.
Right.
And I think that makes a really big difference for how much the griefing gets to people. Because if I have an asshole with me in CS, I'm going to mute them. I'm going to be like, okay, this guy's just a cunt. He'll just play his game and be an asshole. And I will play. In Dota, if somebody's griefing my lane on purpose and then breaking items and running down mid, I can't even play. Like, the game is just over. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, is a pretty big difference. And I wonder, in Heroes of the Storm, because Krubby has played HOTS a lot, and he played it at a high level, so definitely with some hot-headed people that were very competitive. Heroes of the Storm has a completely different leveling system, where in the game, the team levels up together. So I think maybe this feeling of my team is dragging me down, fuck this game, I hate it, is probably, you're less likely to hit that wall in that game because everybody levels up together, and maybe that was part of the design choice from Blizzard. It also made the game very difficult to be like a superstar in, because, you know, you couldn't like giga carry a game in the same way you can in Dota when you're really good. So there's obviously pros and cons. But what can I say? I'm not personally surprised. I think Dota is the most toxic game I've ever played, and I've played many multiplayer games. It's also the best game ever made, so I agree with that. I talked about this to death on this podcast. I wish there was a better way of solving this than Valve have already done. But with the amount of players we have, you either need to hire a lot of people to do community management with banning people, punishments, and whatnot, and that is going to be the most... I don't even know how you would handle that job, but obviously somebody...
Right, there were a few days when they got really hardcore that people were very nice, right? They were afraid.
Yeah, but the problem is also, it's about finding the balance, right? That's so difficult, because ideally, from Valve's perspective, they want to have automated systems where either with machine learning, you can learn how bad behavior looks and punishing it, or you have a report system where people self-administer it. But unfortunately, as with every system, we can't have nice things because people use the system wrong all the time. I even read massively upvoted comments on Reddit where people are like, yeah, if this guy does it, I'm reporting him. And I'm just like, he didn't do anything fucking report worthy. He just played bad, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that's not how the system is supposed to work. So if even the community at large itself, even if you cut out the bad actors in general that are doing the griefing, if the people not griefing still can't even remotely agree on what griefing is, then how do you implement the system, right? It's a mess. It's super difficult to do. Some things are inherently mega obvious. Like, there's parts of toxicity that I feel like there's no like gray zone with those. But with a lot of other ones, the gray area is kind of, I don't know. It's so difficult.
I want to go back to what you were saying, because I agree with everything. And okay, how do I put this? So there's a difference between how toxic somebody is and mm-hmm. the systems in place that allow toxic behavior. Does that make sense?
Right.
Where Dota, mm-hmm. like you said, one person can ruin the game. CS, they can try to, and sometimes they'll be, you know, the games are also, they don't last as long as CS. Like, there's a lot going in favor of Dota to mm-hmm. breed the toxicity. I think people in CS are more toxic, though. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Just from an individual standpoint, they are far more toxic than Dota. In my, I played both games for like fucking 20 years now. I think it's not like it's a small sample size.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Like, the game can be held hostage in Dota more so than it can in CS. But yeah, I don't know what the solution is either, because it is a shame. Hopefully, I mean, he talked about this towards the end of his speech or whatever, but maybe he comes back and starts playing with like 5-man pubs, but he talks about how that he enjoys the fact that you get to play against random people. Like, it's almost like a little mini game to try to corral mm-hmm. people. And like, there's a lot of that like mental aspect that he really enjoys, which he would potentially lose if it's just playing with a bunch of friends. But I mean, that's maybe how you have to go about it, you know, because I don't know if the solution is going to come to be. But again, I don't know if that, like the toxicity thing. I don't know if that's inherently a Dota thing at all, because I think pretty much every game that has all chat, voice chat, and is multiplayer will be toxic. Like, if
and it, I think
like looking outside of Valve games, like I don't play this game, so I'm just assuming. I would assume a game like Call of Duty is even more toxic than both games. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But again, it's the way in which the game works makes the toxicity ruin your game less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Depending on, I guess it's individual, right? If the thing that bothers you the absolute most when you play the game, if it really messes with you that people are toxic on mic or whatever, if that's the worst thing for you in playing multiplayer games, I would say CS or Call of Duty is likely worse. For me personally, and this is obviously, this is just a biased opinion then, the thing that bothers me the most when I play video games is not people raging. It's people wasting my time. It's that I signed up for this game to have fun and play. All right, you're having a bad day, you're grumpy, everything is wrong, so be it. But the people that genuinely just destroy the game so it's not even playable, that's what ticks me off the most, is when people give up games that are extremely winnable, or they're just like, oh, I hate this one teammate I randomly got with, so I'm running down mid. Like, that to me is the worst behavior you can have in this game. Not yelling on the mic, because then I can just fucking mute them, right? If they're annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't mute the behavior. So, I guess a final note on this from Grubby's perspective. I think this is speculation. He may have been feeling this way for a while, but he had a clear goal in mind, right? Which was reaching Immortal. I think you're more willing to push through something if you have a clear challenge you've set for yourself and a goal you want to reach. And he reached that a while back. And then perhaps you're more likely to, you know, lose motivation to grind through the struggles when you've made it to where you were, the challenge you set for yourself. So, and I genuinely think the impression I got from him was that he really much enjoyed the journey. But now that he's at the destination, perhaps it's not the coolest anymore.
Yeah, it's a shame. Hopefully he can come back and enjoy it again, but yeah, I mean, we've seen this. All right,
someone in your chat is saying he had a 9K goal. I don't think that was his original goal. I think that was probably a revised one. I remember the challenge for him was reaching Immortal.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the original challenge I remember. Maybe he upped the stakes, but going from Immortal to 9K is a beast.
That's a bigger grind than Herald to Immortal, I would imagine.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, that's very hard. But I mean, cool if he gave himself a new challenge, whatever it is. Maybe he'll come back. This happens to a lot of players. I also have my phases where I don't play Dota because I just get frustrated with the game quality or people. And then a new patch comes around. They turn some knobs about behavior and things get better for a while. And I genuinely have the impression that Valve are trying, but that it's an impossible problem. That's my gut feeling on it. So,
well, speaking of new patch, Sindarin, let's discuss our wish list for the patch that obviously will be coming out right after this episode. What's on the top of your list? For me, other than the high ground stuff, which is obvious, this kind of piggybacks, it's the banner, of course. Roshan's banner, Sindarin. I have an idea.
Yeah. I want it reworked?
Yeah, well, a little bit. I think I've decided what I want for it, okay?
Okay.
First of all, I like your idea of capture the flag. I'm not going to steal it. That is a cool idea.
It wasn't my idea. I stole it.
Sindarin, it's your idea now.
Okay, my
forever
idea.
Forever be known. What was the idea? That you plant the flag on a hero and there only one spawns in the
game.
You
carry it like a gem. And then if you die, you drop the flag and it can be picked up by anyone.
Yeah, I think that's cool. But let's say they don't do that. I think what they should do is you put the flag. You can only put the flag by a barracks. Okay. It upgrades that barracks temporarily for 5 minutes. The buff lasts as long as the creeps are alive, and it buffs the creeps to the next level, let's call it. So they're gonna have to rework this a bit. By next level, I don't mean like from minute 7 to minute 14 the creeps get incrementally stronger. I'm talking about from a regular creep, it turns into a super creep. If it's a super creep, it turns into a mega creep. If it's a mega creep, it's a fucking Gaben creep, right?
Okay.
So the creeps just
get stronger than the current one.
Yes.
Okay. How much stronger are super creeps than regular ones?
I don't know the exact stats.
I'm actually not sure this is stronger than the current one, but it lasts the whole wave.
This is better and it lasts the whole wave. Yep. It's nice and protected in your base. That's what I want. I don't think that requires that much change, It makes it better, though. That's what I want.
Yeah, considering the impact it's had so far, I think it would be fine if you can't break it.
Yeah,
it's just 5 minutes. Optional, yeah. You plant the banner and it's just there and it's untargetable, can't be destroyed, and it buffs you for 5 minutes. Then it's like impactful because you know it's going to last. You know what you're getting for your investment.
So keep in mind, when you're upgrading the creeps, let's say it's just a regular creep upgrading to super, it also gives less XP and gold, just like a super creep. So that is quite impactful because that's not how it works right now.
True. Yeah.
And then people will stop using it to give fucking vision for just a moment and then they get destroyed. Like, so tilting, actually.
Okay, so for me, I agree the banner definitely needs to change, whatever it is. I don't know. I would like high grounding to be easier, but I would like it to not be easier to the point of the other extreme that we used to have where high grounding was a joke. So some sort of in between. I guess we were in a kind of a sweet spot. I want to say about a year ago, I think it was quite good with the difficulty. Everybody is citing the extra glyph you get when you break tier 3 as the biggest culprit. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's the primary issue, but I can't really put my finger on it. But obviously that would be an obvious change that would make it easier to high ground. Aside from that, my usual requests are the same as always, and I know this is a sentiment a lot of pro players share. I think there should be less gold on the map, and I think the game in general, the ramp up should be slower, but in as a compensation, the base should be weaker. So the game time will maybe drop slightly, but heroes won't get 6 slotted minute 30. Mm-hmm. I think that's the power creep we've had over the last many years, I think, is reaching extreme levels now. We see it from everything such as how fast heroes get gold, the way spells work, having multiple new aspects that they didn't used to have years ago. And it's like, come on, Grandpa, get with the times. But it's not like I'm complaining necessarily that things get stronger. I understand that to make a game appealing over time, you need to add new stuff. People don't want to always play the old stuff. But I think it's been the pace at which it has happened compared to the map itself. You haven't scaled, like, let's say every hero got stronger. You haven't really scaled the map very much. The creeps aren't way much stronger. The towers and the... It's mainly been the base that scaled with the heroes, not the map. So, yeah. I think there's some work to be done there, personally. That's what I would like to see the most. It's just a little bit of a pace adjustment. And then there's a couple of outlier neutral items that need a nerf or a removal, as usual. I still think Ninja Gear is a stupid item. I think Light Collector is too good, but I think that's a given that that one gets nerfed. And yeah, that's probably the most of it.
Yeah, I want to see a lot of Shard and Ags upgrades changed. Those are the most exciting things to talk about in our cast.
I would agree with that. There's a lot of the Shards that are underwhelming.
And of course, Centaur Ags being one of them, please. Just give it, if you're going to keep it the same, give it Terrain Walk and be done with it. Like, mm-hmm. It's good enough then. I think, okay, what about the new hero? You have a wish list for that. So the new hero, I'm going to guess.
Are we sure he comes out with this patch?
100%. There's going to be, they're going to fucking burn Gabe's house down if this hero does not come out. Of course, he lives on a yacht, so it's going to be a little bit more difficult. But it's an agility hero is my guess. Because everything's green surrounding it. Like, Copenhagen theme is green.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it's not related to TI per se, but I feel like the hero is coming out now, which means by the time TI rolls around, it'll be in captain's mode. Maybe it has no relation at all. I'm going to guess agility because we were talking about this at Dreamly. What's the last agility hero that's been released? What did we say?
It wasn't Monkey Pango. King.
Was it Pango? And now he's a universal?
He's universal now, but I want to say he was the last Agi. I could be wrong.
Hoodwink.
Oh, Hoodwink. Yeah, Hoodwink came after Pango. Yeah. True.
Still been a while, though. How long has she been in the game? And agility has actually, it's probably even now, the amount of distribution from the attributes. Anyway,
so
that's
there's 33 int heroes. 32 Agi heroes. I'm counting, sorry.
Please.
30 int heroes only, actually.
Oh.
So I think he's going to... and there's 31 strength heroes. I am going to say he's going to be int for that reason. Maybe I think they're trying to narrow the gap. Oh, sorry. Did I say int at first? I meant universal. There's 33 universals and 30 ints, if I counted this correctly.
Okay. If it's int, then I hope it's actually just Puppet Master. I know the file's name calls him Puppet Master, and he has like the... I think in the video, there's some Puppet Master type stuff. I think the prediction that we made is that it's Slax's ult from the mod that we made where you take over an enemy temporarily. It's really hard to balance, but...
Yeah, I don't know about that. Well, I don't think it's that.
There's ways to balance it. So let's say this was an idea from Jenkins, for example. Let's say you take over Tidehunter for a few seconds. You use Ravage, which works on the allies then in that case, right?
Yeah.
Instead of Ravage just being on cooldown, it's like gives it like a 10-second cooldown or something, you know? So it's not like he wastes the entire spell, but you get to use it on their body. It's interesting.
I mean, this is literally just Uber Rubik then, right?
Yes, yes, in a way.
To me, this sounds completely ridiculous, but who knows? Like, maybe you can balance numbers or whatever.
First of all, everything is balanceable, right?
Yeah.
But there's been rumors that this has been in the game, in the files, for a long time. So I'm interested to see if that comes to be how they did balance it, because this will be maybe the hardest skill to balance if it is anything like that.
And if there's anything Valve really needs right now, it's more fucked up interactions like Rubik and Morph. So I really hope they do that so they can use more dev time on fixing the infinite list of bugs with those abilities.
If they do copy Puppet Master, I can kind of explain to you what he does. You can tell me.
I think you've told me this
before.
Have I?
Okay. So.
Yeah, he makes like a voodoo doll and then you can cast spells on that one, right?
Yeah, so the voodoo doll, it's just like amplified damage, but it's attached to the hero. But if the hero runs far enough away, it gets detached. But you basically hit the puppet, does extra damage, stuns apply. Like if you stun the voodoo thing, it stuns the enemy as well. That's like the crux of it. But then he has like two disables, which seems pretty crazy. He has like a kind of a Winter Wyvern ult, but it's a basic ability, so it's a less crazy. Where you click on an enemy and they attack the closest target, basically. And then his first skill leashes a target. Very simple. So that like synergizes with the ult so you can't run away from it. And then the last one is just a passive that it's like a crit every... it's a passive crit that goes... It has a cooldown, but every time you attack, it goes down. The cooldown reduces by one. This is what we put in for Penguin Commandos when I made that hero.
Right.
But it's like it crits and then it does like an AoE splash. So, and he was an in-hero. He would use Harkin's Blade, which is now basically in Dota. So it would align very nicely. Everybody loved that design. It was a pretty cool hero overall. And he was ranged.
What attribute was he in Han?
Int.
Yeah. To me, this design sounds like Int. But obviously, we don't know how much inspiration they'll draw from that. But. What was the last int hero that got in the game? Grimstroke.
No way.
No, Muerta. Never mind. Oh, yeah. Muerta's int. And I think they put Muerta in specifically as int because we were lacking int heroes, right?
Yeah.
But we still have fewer ints. So.
Yeah, could be int then. Who knows?
Anyway.
Yeah, so expect that patch today, guys. You're welcome for coming out with the podcast.
Yep.
I have the Oscars on here. I didn't get to watch it because I was traveling, so I don't think it's even worth discussing.
I didn't watch it either.
I know.
Did we do any predictions this time? I don't think we did, right?
We didn't do shit. I know that Oppenheimer won Best Picture. That was a great movie, by the way. I don't disagree with that choice at all. Emma Stone went to the same middle school as me, Cinder. Now she has 2 Oscars. Congratulations to her.
Yeah. I think she was 3 years. Did she cast a TI?
No. Get fucked, Emma Stone.
Yeah.
She's a Suns fan, by the way. So actually,
really?
She's pretty legit. Yeah. I like her.
Oh.
I did not watch her movie, though, because it looks really weird. And I don't think I'm going to like it. But
don't you think it's interesting that you can inherently like a person because of the sports team they cheer for and knowing nothing about them as a person?
I think she's a really good actor.
Just a thought.
I predicted she was going to win her first Oscar like 2 years beforehand.
She might be a major piece. You never know. You never know people until you know them, Shannon.
a major piece of garbage, you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's a Suns fan, so that's impossible.
Okay, buddy. She's a good I have person. Anecdotal evidence to prove to disprove that.
Mm, okay. Well. Okay, I guess that's it. So if the patch comes out today, are we waiting until next week? Just doing normal podcast? Up to you.
Oh, you mean with the... Let's see. If it literally comes out today, we should probably just record it earlier, right? And then catch up a little bit on the episodes we missed.
Yeah, I guess so.
That way.
All right, well, keep that...
Do you think it's coming out today, actually?
I genuinely do. Yeah, Thursday...
You do? All right.
I don't think it has anything to do with us, although it is funny, but Thursday is like the perfect day because... It's towards the end of the week, which leads into the weekend, but it gives you an extra day to work on, extra 2 days kind of, Thursday included, to work on bugs. So it is a good day for, which leads us to the discussion of whether we should be moving the podcast to a different day, which maybe.
We'll see. Isn't it just funny at this point?
Yeah.
It's really bad for business, so let's keep it this way.
Yeah, sounds good. All right. Thanks for watching, everybody. Until next time, Suns fan and Sinner and signing out. Peace!
We say things that don't
subscribe
mean anything, but thanks for listening.